You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International, in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning, everyone. At the risk of repeating myself,
you would never do that.
America's exit poll. And the reason we are is because there are perhaps millions of Americans voting early around the country or voting absentee, basically taking advantage of this sort of shadow voting infrastructure of early voting and absentee voting to get their vote counted. The question is, does it work? We want your assessment of the experience of early voting in America's exit poll. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake at thetakeaway.org. We also just want you to tell us the story of how you made up your mind. I mean, you are voters and we're polling you coming out of the polls. And Joe says on our website, does anyone else have to vote in a church or other house of worship in their district? I'm a first-time voter and I'm surprised that in my town of 6,500 with three public schools and a library and high taxes that I'll be voting in a church. What have you seen? Is that a separation of church and state concern there? First-time voters, say a lot of churches are voting precincts. 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake at thetakeaway.org.
We're going to talk about a different kind of story about the international world economy. While Western and Asian economies are in turmoil, there's a twist here. African banking systems seem to have managed to remain mostly untouched by the subprime mortgage crisis, a model of restraint, say some. Joining us to explain is Martin Plaut from the BBC. Good morning, Martin.
Oh, good morning.
Now, here's something that just can't be said about many, many developed countries today, and that is the IMF report, there is no systematic risk to any African country in terms of banking. Can you explain?
Well, it's not that difficult to understand, really. I suppose, in a sense, it's the result of Africa being so marginalized for such a long time. I mean, if one takes it at the extreme, let's say that you were a subsistence farmer in the highlands in Ethiopia. You know, you're wandering around with your goats and maybe a few cattle, a donkey or so. Well, you know, who cares what happens to, the subprime market? It makes absolutely no difference to you whatsoever. Now, of course, that is at the extreme, but there are a lot of people who still live in Africa. About half of the entire continent lives in rural areas where they really have a marginal connection to the world economy.
But in terms of the banking industries that do exist, they're heavily regulated in a way that has prevented them from jumping into the fray in the last couple of years of all of the market ups.
Sure. And I mean, if you take two examples, either Nigeria or South Africa, Nigeria had an absolutely appalling banking system until quite recently when they did a big transformation. They regulated the system. They reduced the number of banks. And they also made it absolutely clear that they had to have the right kind of capital reserves in order to undertake their lending. In South Africa, it's more or less a hangover from the apartheid time when there have been strong controls on the amount of money that you're allowed to take out of South Africa. And that has meant that there are plenty of money sitting in the South African banks to lend and to, borrow when they need to. So, in a sense, Africa has been fairly isolated from what is going on. I mean, I'm not trying to suggest that there's no implication for
Africa. Oh, certainly not.
But, the banks certainly are looking quite good shape.
South Africa, you just mentioned, interestingly enough, is actually more integrated into the international financial system than other countries. And they've certainly felt the pinch of just the financial aspect of it. And then obviously we could talk about how this affects commodities throughout the continent.
Absolutely. Well, South Africa, because it is more integrated into the world, does feel the effects more directly and in a sense in two particular ways. The South African economy has been running a major balance of payments deficit for a long time. The way this has been responded to is that South Africa has allowed people to invest in the country. There's been a lot of buying of South African shares. That inflow of money is now disappearing in the opposite direction because, of course, international investors are desperate to get their hands on any money they have. So the rand, the South African currency, has fallen dramatically in the last few days because of this. On the other hand, South Africa also needs to borrow in the international markets, particularly for its power sector. I don't know if you remember, but there were terrible electricity cuts in South Africa earlier this year. The mines had to close, that sort of thing. So the Electricity Supply Commission, ESCOM, needs to borrow $34 billion in the next 5 years. Now, that is a lot of money for any country, and particularly in Africa. When they tried to launch the first tranche of that, which was $500 million a couple of weeks ago, they couldn't find any takers at a price that was acceptable. They had to withdraw it. Now, that's a big blow.
And, yeah, not encouraging at all. And then you add to that commodities and the decrease in world demand. Let's start with oil.
Well, sure. You know, that is going to be a big blow. And the Nigerians have just said that they're going to look at their budget again for next year. But, you know, the price of oil has come down from, what, $140 to something like $70. It's halved in the last period. But the last budget was predicated on an assumption that Nigeria drew up of $62.5. So, you know, they were pretty conservative. They must have clocked up plenty of reserves in that period. The question, of course, in Nigeria has to ask is what happened to the reserves, where did they go? And that's people have been thrown out of the country for asking those kind of questions. But you know, just let me give you a couple of examples. The Ugandan Central Bank today has come out saying yes, there will be a reduction in growth from about 8% to about 5 or 6%. Well, I bet you the United States would love to have a growth of 5 or 6%.
No question. And very quickly, last question. It's not just oil. You also have commodities from copper to produce.
Absolutely. That's absolutely right. So somewhere like Zambia will be affected by this. They are a big, a copper producer. Somewhere like the Democratic Republic of Congo as well. They will be hit. I'm not trying to suggest that Africa is unaffected by it, but we're talking probably a growth rate of around 5 or 6% next year, which is not really bad at all.
Not bad at all. Martin Plaut, thank you so much, as always.
Pleasure.
Martin Plaut is the BBC Africa editor. He's joining us from London. And now we turn to Femi Okeke, who's got the latest headlines at this hour.
Thanks, Adora. The time is 28 minutes past the hour.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.